Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
With me, Michelle Martin. Good morning. Asia Pacific shares are trading higher this morning. Tokyo and Seoul are leading the way. The Nikkei and Kospi, they're both up 0.2%. Sydney trading higher as well. Investors are focused on earnings, China's economy, and much more. Joining me now for a closer look at what is behind the market action is Sunny Hamid, Director for Wealth Management at Financial Alliance. Good morning, Sunny.
Morning, Michelle.
We start this morning with the intersection of cryptocurrencies and the more traditional world of asset investing, exchange-traded funds. This evening, the first Bitcoin ETF launches in the United States. It's called the ProShares ETF, and it's comprised of Bitcoin futures contracts rather than the Bitcoins themselves. So the ETF won't track Bitcoin prices directly, but rather agreements to buy or sell Bitcoins later at an agreed-upon price. Now, Sunny, cryptocurrency enthusiasts have been actively touting and awaiting the launch of a crypto ETF in the US. What is the advantage of investing in an ETF like this? And if you are bullish on Bitcoins, why not buy them directly?
Well, good question. I think first and foremost, better late than never, and better something than nothing at all. Mm-hmm. So I think while a spot Bitcoin ETF would have been the best, I think the SC really wants to protect clients' interests, and therefore futures being regulated themselves mm-hmm. would be a much easier and much safer route for clients. So that's a key advantage. So being a regulated instrument, i.e. Bitcoin ETF, mm-hmm. investing in a regulated underlying instrument, which is an ETF, which is a Bitcoin futures, makes it what we call a regulated instrument in totality, and therefore a lot of clients, a lot of investors who have sat by the sidelines not being able to invest because a lot of these exchanges that we see are probably either non-regulated, do not have SC approval, and so they are unable to do so. So for example, in my part of the universe, mm-hmm. financial advisory, I'm assuming my peers in the US, they aren't able to advise their clients to invest in Bitcoin unless it's a regulated instrument.
Right.
And this would allow them to do so. So I think that's a major key difference. And I think we have hundreds of millions of dollars sitting by the sideline waiting to come on once there's a regulated instrument. So that's a key thing. If you're talking about disadvantages, mm-hmm. then basically futures carry basically a slight indirect relationship with the spot price, as you correctly mentioned earlier. There is a correlation, but sometimes that correlation weakens either because of the use of futures to go short and stuff, so that weakens it. And there's this thing about rolling over the futures, because future contracts actually expire after a number of months or a number of years, depending on the date. And that rollover sometimes can be a little bit costly depending on the environment. So there are pros and cons to it, but like I mentioned at the very start, I think people are just welcoming having something is better than nothing.
Fantastic insight. News of the ProShares ETF launch has been helping fuel a rally in Bitcoin prices. Bitcoin currently trading about $62,000 a token. It is up 50% over the past month. A second crypto ETF was due to start trading soon, but the company behind that fund, Invesco, has changed its mind. Interestingly enough, there's already another ETF on the market that has crypto exposure, but which has gone under the radar. It's called the Wisdom Tree Enhanced Commodity Strategy Fund, ticker GCC, and it has an allocation of about 3% to cash-settled Bitcoin futures that are trading on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. Sunny, does the launch of a crypto ETF, in your view, represent a step towards cryptocurrencies becoming a more accepted asset class, something that investors may want to consider for their portfolios?
Yes, definitely. I think it's a step in many steps. It always starts off with the spot market. Then it moves on to what we call the structured products or derivative markets. So you'd see launches in terms of futures, you'll probably see launches in terms of options, and then later on more complex kind of structured products surrounding that particular instrument itself. And this is what we see in the traditional markets. You launch a share, then you have maybe a futures on the share or currency, you have the options on it, and then you have the structured products on that particular share itself or that particular FX itself. So So this is really just the way things evolve in the traditional market, which is happening to Bitcoin. And it's really a recognition that, as you mentioned earlier, it is becoming an asset class in itself.
Sunny, the last time you were on MarketView Minute with us about 10 weeks ago, ESR had just announced it was purchasing ARA Asset Management. Fast forward to this past Friday after the markets closed, and we have a follow-up to that deal, a $1.4 billion merger between ESR REIT and ARA Logos Logistics Trust. If approved by the company's shareholders, this combined REIT will manage nearly 90 properties spread across Singapore and Australia. So, Sunny, when companies merge, they generally promise synergies, that the combined company will be able to make more money, cut costs, or that during challenging times, this merged company will be more resilient. Sunny, what is your take on consolidation in the REIT sector? Is this good for the industry? And what about for shareholders?
I think you've kind of mentioned all the advantages, which is very true. Economies of scale, of diversification of assets, whether it's geographical or whether the assets itself, the economies of scale from either management or shared services and such. So I think those things are more or less well known. And I think not only for REITs, but many industries coming up from COVID, you will see these kind of mergers and acquisitions take place. It's a new norm. It's a new environment. I think people understand that, and size does matter in this kind of environment. In terms of shareholders itself, it really just is a question of who's stronger, who's weaker, and what deal comes through. Mm. So I guess it's a case-to-case basis on who's gobbling up who and who has the bigger share, the is more powerful in that particular transaction. So it's, I guess, like I mentioned, a case-to-case basis.
So there's a bit of a squid games happening on the REIT sector.
Yeah, exactly.
Investors bid up ESR REIT shares at the open yesterday, but then turned around and sold. ESR REIT initially jumped more than 4% on news of the proposed merger, but by the day's end, it closed more than 1% below where it had started the day. ARA Logos opened down and then finished even lower, closing off more than 5%. Now, the IHS REITs has lost a bit of ground since the last time you were on the show, Sunny. It's up about 3% over the past 2 weeks. What is your overall take on investing in this sector? And are you distinguishing between different types of REITs now, say industrial REITs as opposed to hospitality or retail?
Yes, in a sense, I think there's going to be this reopening normalization trade. So hospitality will do well, haven't been beaten down for many, many months. I mean, it's. I think it probably has moved a bit, and it will continue to do so as we reopen and normalize. But the big question now is that normalization just bringing it from what we call undervalue to normal values where it should be after all, or is there additional bullishness to bring it to beyond what is called real value or normal value? So I think that's the key thing. So, but we will see this part of the pie, or this part of the cake, which is from undervalued to what we call normal value. So I think that's baked in. But the other aspect of it is will we see more? Yeah, that's really a question at this point, especially given what's happening to the economy. And so really, it's a question of which sector you're in, mm-hmm. And what play is in play. So now it's a normalization play.
All right. Next up, let's turn to China's economy, which is growing much slower than a year ago. The country's gross domestic product ticks in at 4.9% for the third quarter, a big drop from the 7-8% growth rates that we've been accustomed to seeing in China. And perhaps surprisingly, China's economy growing at a slower pace now than the U.S. So, Sunny, two questions to kick this off. Are you surprised by the softer numbers? And second, why isn't China's economy growing faster?
Not surprised at all. Given early in the year, China actually, the People's Bank of China came out and told banks that you need to slow down your credit growth, the credit stimulus and such. So automatically, you know from there that basically with lower leverage, lower credit growth, automatically the economy will slow down. And I think we were seeing that. They're very concerned about credit expansion, the bubble building up. We've seen it with Evergrande and such in terms of property sector and so on. So that's one thing, that the credit growth is slowing the Chinese economy. The other one is basically within the Chinese economy itself, there's this restructuring, as you know, and that's causing a bit of uneasiness. And whenever you tinker with the workings of a capitalist economy, i.e. either say you can't make profit, i.e. the education sector, or you shouldn't be making too many profits in the technology sectors and such, inevitably you are basically, you will slow the economy down because there's this kind of a bit of a restructuring. So I think this should be going on for the rest of the year. So I don't expect Chinese growth to be anything near to what they used to be, at least for this year.
All right. So if we look behind the headline numbers, there are some good signs, though. Unemployment dropping, retail sales rebounding. So do you think this 5% growth could be the new norm for China beyond this year, or is this a blip?
I won't be surprised. I'm in a sense that basically, like I say, once you have a restructuring and really everybody's waiting for the dust to settle. If the dust settles and it's clear that Chinese companies basically may not be allowed to make supernormal profits, give you an example. So therefore, most of them will be tied to what we call quite normal profits, or a little bit higher than usual. Then, you know, it really means that the Chinese markets aren't really going to go where they used to be going, double-digit gains and such. But if the dust settles and the business back to normal or normal business as usual, then I think it's okay. So it really depends on the situation, especially with this change in policy from Beijing.
Okay, so from the investor's perspective, Sunny, China's stock markets have been under pressure in recent months. President Xi Jinping's government, as you say, has cracked down on all things like monopolies, big tech, the education sector, more even. The Hang Seng Tech Index, which does include big names like Tencent and Alibaba, it's off 25% since the beginning of the year. And the Shenzhen and Shanghai composite indices are in the red, have been over the past couple of months, but only by a few percentage points. So what is your overall take on investing in Chinese stocks now? Is this a good time to buy, or are there too many overhangs on the sector still?
You can see it either the glass half empty or half full.
Right.
There are a lot of people who would say that this is a good time to buy. I tend to err more on the side of we need to really sit down and understand and wait for the dust to settle, because as I mentioned earlier, if this really is a structural change, that means you need to approach China in a totally different manner than we had before. That could mean instead of going for growth companies, because growth companies are not allowed to now act as though they are capitalists, i.e. make as much profit as they used to, then the strategy is to go for value companies. Okay, then if tech companies are being aimed by Beijing and such, then we need to go to consumer companies, because presumably Beijing is okay if it serves the people. You know, so that kind of thinking probably has to change if one is set, or once we get an idea of, yes, this is really how it goes. It's not temporary, it's structural in nature.
Now, speaking of overhangs on the market, a big cloud that was dominating headlines, not just for China, but globally, is the China Evergrande Group saga. There were concerns that the property giant would default on its debts, and those concerns were roiling markets. And in fact, it has missed payments, but investors don't seem as concerned about it as they were a couple of weeks back. So, Sunny, what has changed?
Well, I think people understand now potentially it could be a controlled demolition. so meaning to say that Beijing understands that, you know, it can't allow a sudden collapse of such a big entity that would have systemic risk. But it wants at the same time to send out a signal that it no longer will tolerate implicit guarantees, implicit understanding that the government will always come to bail out all these companies because it's so big and such. So I think that's the message. But it's really a kind of a tight wire where PBOC and Beijing is now walking on. It really has to weigh between how much to allow and how much signal it wants to send. So yeah, a policy mistake could happen. But currently, at this particular point, I think, as you mentioned, the market is giving the benefit of the doubt and has calmed down.
So Evergrande, not the only property developer to face problems. On Friday, China Properties Group announced it had defaulted on $200 million worth of notes. Before that, Fantasia Holdings failed to make a bond payment in early October. And all eyes are now on Sinic Holdings, which yesterday announced it will not be able to pay offshore bonds worth some $250 million. So how worried are you that China's properties woes, Sunny, will spill over into other sectors, not to mention beyond its borders?
It probably has, in a sense, in a sense that property bonds, Chinese property bonds, were hot sellers outside of China and also in Singapore. Last year and prior to this, some of them carried double-digit coupons and such. And back then, of course, the property sector was still doing okay. Everybody was confident. They didn't mind the high yields with, of course, low ratings and such. But now we know it's blowing up. So we will have defaults. We will have a lot of investors being hit. But again, I think Beijing will allow not only, I think, in the property sector, they will allow state-owned enterprises, government-linked companies, and other companies in the private sector to potentially have, again, a controlled demolition. So a few will probably go down to send a signal to the markets that we are reining in on these excessive borrowings, because right now it's part of our policy that credit growth is a problem, or excessive debt is a problem that they have stated very, very clearly. So I think that's what we're going to see. We're going to see a few more big question marks. Who? We probably have some idea from what you just mentioned, a few names, but I think we're going to see a few more.
All right. Let's turn to U.S. markets now. We are in the midst of earnings season. The big banks have all reported better than expected results. Attention this evening turns to Johnson & Johnson, Procter & Gamble, Netflix and United Airlines. Sunny, what is your take on so far on earnings season and how could it impact markets?
Markets really looking out for guidance, the typical guidance that companies provide when they release their earnings. It comes amid kind of a mixed picture. We've got signs now that the economy is slowing down, not only the U.S., but globally. And this is because of supply chain disruptions, higher inflationary pressures, and such. So it really depends. If these companies come out and give guidance that we still think we can weather this upcoming storm, higher prices, because we can transfer prices either to the end users or we're ready for it, then I think these companies will do okay. Really, the market's looking out for companies who will provide negative guidance to say that, you know, it's the environment was tough, and despite reopening, it's still continuing to be tough because the environment has changed, and because we've got all these problems with supply chain, we won't be able to get our chips or our products out because chips are being delayed for the next 1 year. I think so. That will probably hit companies with that kind of guidance.
Now, here in Singapore, one of the big stories has been the impact of higher fuel prices. They're driving several players out of the local electricity market. How do you think this consolidation will impact other businesses and Singapore shares?
So we're really seeing it with higher prices across the board. And I think recently the Monetary Authority of Singapore has announced it's guiding the Sing dollar slightly stronger in response to higher inflationary prices. The threat of higher inflationary pressures, imported higher inflationary pressures. So I think overall it's going to be a tough environment. It really doesn't help that the supply chain has been disrupted, you know. So again, we have a situation where there's demand because we're reopening. People want things, but you can't supply because inventories have been run down to almost zero and you can't restock it because there's a supply chain disruption. And the only the thing that will equilibrate everything is prices. So prices have to move higher, and when prices move higher in a situation like this, it's probably not so good. It hits what we call disposable income. People still are a bit cautious, and yet prices are higher, and we're not really fully out. You know, so it may be a situation where growth still remains quite tapered, and therefore company incomes will be a bit muted, unless of course you are riding on the reopening. You know, hospitality, airlines, they may see a slight bump up because of the real.
The Straits Times Index is up 11% since the beginning of the year. What is your overall take on the market?
It was a laggard last year and for quite some time because of the lack of tech shares. So North Asia all rallied and left behind Singapore. And Singapore was also dragged down by the fact that Southeast Asia was in the doldrums for quite some time because of the vaccination rates and so on. And a slower China also hit Southeast Asia because it's a key exporter of commodities into China. So overall, that has been weighing on Singapore. So there's a bit of a rebalancing back into Singapore. There's a bit of buying values, oversold stocks in Singapore. So I think that's the catalyst for the 11% odd that we've seen today, up to date, year to date. My take is whether this can continue really is a question of whether we can restructure. If you remember, I think the government participating in the local stock market to, you know, to pump some money in. And stuff. So we just need to restructure the local stock market to be a little bit more tech-driven, right. A little bit more futuristic kind of growth areas rather than the old traditional part. So I think that's key to whether the stock market will continue on its run in the future.
Sunny Hamid is Director for Wealth Management at Financial Alliance. Always so good to speak with you, Sunny. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
It is 9:25, so 25 minutes into the local trading day. Let's get a check on the STI, which is now trading up 0.83% at 3,200.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.